You're listening to the Looseheads podcast. Join the movement.
Let's get people talking about mental health.
And together we will tackle the stigma. This is the Looseheads podcast.
So hello and welcome back to the Looseheads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union with me, Chris Hill. And after a bit of a fallow week for us, we have returned. So thank you all for joining us as always. And if you may have noticed our podcast over the last few weeks or just listening to us for the first time today, thank you for tuning in. And I hope you enjoy the next hour or so listening to our guests discuss their truly outstanding career in the game, but also get a sense of why we love and continue to do these podcasts. And I guess this might be encapsulated actually by the day we're recording the podcast, because this particular episode has been recorded on Time to Talk Day, which the guys at Looseheads have been promoting on their social media. And Rob and Dave join me today as well. And guys, I guess in a little weird way, this is why we do the podcast, because we can have a conversation between ourselves and it might make a big difference to somebody listening. So it's important to promote days like today, isn't it?
Yeah, like you say, Time to Talk Day today. You know, it's so important to connect with others and share your problems and feelings with your close support networks. Sending a text to someone goes a long way. There was something that was sent to us on Instagram this week, which was quite nice, and I thought I'd mention it, which was a story that about a father and son relationship, and it was Andrew Norrie, a suicide survivor, and he said that talking to his family was the easiest, most difficult thing he's ever done, and he's glad to be alive. So I thought that was quite fitting to mention at the start of the podcast. A small conversation has the power to make a big difference.
Yeah, and what's been quite refreshing to hear this week and last week was some of the Six Nations head coaches sort of talk about players' well-being during this time, and it is affecting everyone, elite athletes right down to people who are just playing the game for the love of it as well. So it really nice story, that one, Rob, and hopefully what we are doing on these podcasts is helping people during this difficult time. But myself, Rob and Dave are absolutely delighted to say our Looseheads conversation today on our next Looseheads podcast is with England legends, World Cup winner, and now one of the voices you will be able to hear across various TV and radio networks throughout the Six Nations. It is Danielle Nolly Waterman. Nolly, thank you so much for giving us your time on the Looseheads podcast. Important question to begin with, and we asked Natasha Hunt this when she came on the pod a couple of weeks ago. Obviously, she's well known for being called Mo. You are well known for being called Nolly. Just give us a little bit of background why that is, and I guess not many people do introduce you as Danielle Waterman anymore.
Not even my parents call me Danielle anymore. I think it's far too posh for me and how I've turned out as a person. It's absolutely brilliant to be on the podcast. So thank you for welcoming me. And I wish it was a good story. I actually did a quiz the other day for some work colleagues, and it was a general knowledge quiz based around just some of my background in women's rugby. So maybe I could lie and say it's short for knowledge, but it's not. My brother called me Danny Ollie when I was little, because he had a friend called Daniel and a friend called Ollie. And then I had a book that was Ollie Nolly Elephant, and I was a real chunk as a kid. So I was Danny Ollie Nolly Elephant, and then they ditched the Danny Ollie and I stayed Nolly the Elephant for a while. Nolly. And I moved to New Zealand when I was just before my fifth birthday, and my mum took me into primary school, and I think it was a real Kiwi thing, because my mum was like, look, this is, dressed me up all nice, and like, this is, I was like stomped in, and they were like, oh, this is Danielle, but we call her Nolly, and they're like, yeah, we love it. So that's kind of how it stuck.
Love that.
Hey, I don't actually know any other Nollies. Maybe there one day will be some other Nollies, because they've been inspired by a women's rugby player, who knows?
Absolutely. Well, that's the important question out the way, Nolly, to begin with. But it's brilliant to have you on the podcast, Nolly. And as we mentioned in the intro there, your career speaks for itself, and we'll get onto that a bit later in sort of the situation in women's rugby at the moment. But as we always do on the podcast, we begin with sort of Looseheads and tackling the stigmas. And I wanted to sort of speak to you first of all about something you retweeted last week, and it was to do with Denny Solomona. And you'll probably know, Nolly, and people who are listening will probably know that Denny is a strong ambassador for Looseheads. He's been with the team a couple of years now, and he posted something inspiring on an Instagram about sort of the struggles he's been through over the last year or so. And what I noticed from it was the overwhelming support that people came out with for Denny. And one of the things that came out of it was someone said to him, hopefully your message will inspire others to do the same. And I just wanted to get kind of your thoughts on it, Nolly, and why you decided to retweet Denny's message.
Denny is a fantastic guy. You know, I've kind of like, I don't know him really, really closely, but obviously is having an amazing elite professional rugby career. And I just feel like, you know, his association with you guys has been brilliant. Obviously I've seen that, but to put those words out in such an honest and real way was just really inspiring. I think, you know, he didn't need to say it. He didn't need to put himself out there and say to his fans and to the club's fans, look, I haven't been playing well, but, you know, to give it some context, this is where I'm at. And I think it just, it resonated with me personally because of the journey I've been on, and actually so many players that I know that they get absolutely kind of dragged through the mud on in social media and people having an opinion now about their performance, but yet and they're looking at the, because they look at the physical specimen of the player. And actually when I played some of my best rugby was when I was happy and confident and having fun and just chucking a ball about. And actually that's my mind controlling that. Obviously my body's doing the work, but my brain is the business. And I just thought his words were very, very honest. And I have a huge respect for him as a player. But I think that just showed what type of person he is as well, which is awesome.
Yeah, absolutely, Nolly. And I mean, Rob and Dave, obviously you guys were quick to show your support for Denny over the weekend as well.
Yeah, he was on Radio 5 Live as well this morning talking about his journey, which was really nice. We're privileged and proud to have him on board as an ambassador. He's, like Nolly said there, he's open and honest about his story and so giving of his time. And, you know, if he can help one person, then he's sort of done his job, and it won't just be one person that he helps. He'll help a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, I wish Denny all the best. I've met him a couple of times with the work we're doing with Loose Heads. And he's a brilliant character. And some of the messages he received on over the weekend were really nice to see. So we wish Denny all the best. And I'm sure he'll come back stronger and start doing what he loves doing and scoring tries for Sale on a regular basis. But also this week, while we're recording a podcast, Nolly, it is Children's Mental Health Week as well. And I know you've been involved with the Youth Sports Trust, if that's right, in sort of doing after schools, clubs and session for kids at the moment. And we know it's a tough time for everyone during lockdown, and kids will want that release. They'll want a bit of fun in their lives. But I guess as well, it's all about the mental health of these children as well, getting out there and staying active.
Oh, just, you know, we all know the benefits of sport, you know, the physical side of just getting out and being healthy, but the mental side. And I think, you know, for parents and for young children, I'm a dog parent, as is Dave. And, you know, that's actually been a relief. But I just, because you've got the reason to go out and walk your number one fan. But I think, as I say, for parents and young people, being enclosed in a small space, not being able to burn off energy, not being able to interact, being put under a huge amount of stress in so many different angles. I think that the work that I've done with the Youth Sport Trust, if that can just give a little bit of respite to the parents, at the same time for the young people to hear a different voice, and to do something different, to learn. The stuff that I do, especially in particular with the Youth Sport Trust, is around physical education as well. So it's not just to get up and be active, it's actually learn along the way. And I think that that's something that, as an athlete, I can tell stories and I can interact with young people in a different way that a parent or a teacher or a auntie and uncle can, because they see elite sport as something exciting and fun and different. And if I can help educate them about the importance of getting out and doing something by storytelling and bringing it to life, I'm really passionate about that. So it's been great to do bits and pieces. But as I say, I think I possibly think working parents that are at home looking after their children are at the worst end of the stick at the moment. And I take my hat off to everybody because it is such a difficult time.
It's one of those subjects that's kind of been around in the media recently. I think Lawrence Dallaglio was talking about the importance of getting kids sort of active and doing things. And I know from my own experiences, having been a governor at a primary school, kind of, they want to do a lot more around physical activity and PE, but there's so much pressure on the curriculum, English, math, science, and SATs and results. And how important do you think it is to have these kind of outside charities and organisations coming in and giving sort of their knowledge, their experience, and helping to keep kids active from both a mental and physical wellbeing perspective?
I think it's beyond important. It's imperative to have that development for a young person. I think when you look at young people, Jason Robinson has been a massive advocate for it in the North. And, you know, he's very, very open about his background, saying he wasn't an academic young child and his sport was his avenue to be successful. So you've got one side of it where it allows children to explore, express, succeed at school if kind of the mainstream subjects aren't their thing. But fundamentally, PE and physical literacy helps you in life. It helps you build confidence. It teamwork, communication. There's, you know, learning to win and lose, you know, all of those values that we need in life just to succeed. And at the same time, is obviously all of the physical benefits. And so many people skip over the mental side and actually just, they always kind of look at, you know, the endorphins and obviously getting your heart pumping and all that type of stuff. But there's something that changes your mindset when you're being active with people having fun, and it can really bring together communities. And I think I did some wonderful sessions with a hockey club called the Flyers, and they're from Kent. And it's a group that looks after young people with special educational needs, and they've delivered all of their program via Zoom. And I was very starstruck because I was on the call with Basil Brush, like the Basil Brush was on the Zoom, and it was just amazing. And hearing the organizers talk about how they were more confident to interact on Zoom with their lessons, from, like, their parents have been saying they're interacting better. They're actually have things to talk about because they've done something on this call with everybody where they've done a warm up and they've done a dance and they've met all these athletes and they've done bits and pieces. So actually the impact it can have on everything else is huge.
Definitely, Nolly. And for you yourself, it sounds like you've been pretty busy during the lockdown with all the stuff you've been doing there with Youth Sports Trust. And it must have been quite a strange time for you as well, Nolly, because we've seen you covering the Champions Cup towards the end of last season, obviously the Six Nations as well. Rugby has kind of continued. We'd had a couple of breaks a few weeks ago. But how has it been for you in terms of your work in the media industry, Nolly?
So like last season, I was as in...
Yeah, I'm trying to I was thinking that in my head while I was asking you the question.
Yeah, like 1920, obviously we got two-thirds of the way through from the elite side. And I was loving all the opportunities that I had with commentary, and I was doing punditry, and I'd been travelling off to the Sevens with HSBC, and it was really cool. And then obviously we all went into lockdown and everything stopped. And then I felt very, very privileged to get back into the commentary box about being in England rather than being at the ground. And then we finally got to the grounds to do some stuff, but it was really high pressure games and I'd had a huge break. And as somebody that was new in anyway, going straight into Channel 4 quarterfinal, semi-final, final, first ever men's Six Nations game, it was pretty intense. And I didn't really realize how it was affecting me, because I just thought, oh, it's the stress of being back to work. Nobody's used to like the routine and having to watch all the games. And, you know, there's a huge amount of preparation that goes into commentary, especially when you're new. And actually, from my perspective, I'm also learning about all the men's game. I've never been a rugby nors from the men's side. I always was with the women's because I was playing them, so I needed to know them. But with the men's, it was just a nicety if it was on, or if not, no worries. And actually, I'd normally had enough of rugby by that point, so I was out with my dog instead on a Saturday. But it was tough. And then the Six Nations game that I covered on ITV was the first time I'd ever really experienced any social media trolling. And actually, looking back at the game, like, I did well. Like, we were in England. I wasn't even in the same room as the main commentator because of social distancing. Like, I had it pretty tough. I was on my own as well as the co-coms, because we're supposed to have Gordon Darcy and he couldn't fly. And actually, out of something that was pretty rough at the time, because when people say, oh, ignore it, you don't. You read it and it cuts deep and it gets, and it, you know, and I was really surprised at some of the stuff people were saying, like genuinely, like, oh my God, it was mad, like absolutely mad about my voice, about like, honestly, the things I'm like, why are you telling me this? Like, why are you tagging me and all this stuff? Anyway, on the back of it, I replied to someone, which obviously then triggered off my, like my followers and people that I know seeing the response. And so many of them reached out. I felt so, so fortunate. And you know, you had the likes of Lee McKenzie, Jill Douglas, Sonia McLaughlin, and then on the other side, and the guys, Nick Mullins, Miles Harrison, Craig Doyle, Ugo Monier, like all of the team that I have so much respect for, all reached out and was like, look, we all get this. We all get it. You are not on your own. And also Ugo came over to my house and we went through the game and it was absolutely brilliant. Having somebody that I have obviously a huge amount of respect for, brilliant friend, just sit down and actually kind of grab me by the hand and just take me through the game. He was like commentating live on the game for me and showing me the things I did and I could improve. And it was this total turning time for me where I was like, you know what? I'm either in or I'm out. And I think that with life, we continue doing things because we feel we have to. And if sometimes we do, right? Sometimes we have to stay in the job because we've got families, bills, all that type of stuff to look after. But I didn't have to commentate. I didn't have to do what I was doing. And so I needed to get to a point where I wanted to, and that I felt like I could enjoy it. And yeah, on the back of something that was pretty hectic, total game changer. And now I've just been really loving what I've been doing and I'm commentating this weekend. So all good.
Yeah, it's a brilliant way to look at that, Nolly, and great to hear Ugo. I mean, massive fans of Ugo anyway. He's a big part of what Looseheads do, but fantastic that Ugo came around to, and chatted you through the game. But what I noticed from listening to the game, and I saw all the comments, and I said in the running order, you would have read it, Nolly, they were ridiculous criticisms of yourself, and that's not because I've got you on a Zoom and might quit the podcast. But what I thought from it was people were just singling you out because you were new and you were a woman commentating on the game, and it wasn't the fact that you were giving a great analysis on Hugo Keenan scoring. I think you scored two or three tries that day, and it's quite clear you have a fantastic on-screen relationship with Miles Harrison. I know you've done the Champions Cup with him, and I was just thinking that must be so draining for you and other potential female commentators and pundits in the game, that you have to kind of switch your phone on after the game and go through social media and read some of this ridiculous things from, as Mo Hunt said, eggs on Twitter who are kind of not that informed about what's going on.
Yeah, it is frustrating, but I suppose having built confidence for myself, actually quite often we're really self-conscious Ugo's calling me.
Should answer it and tell him.
There we go. Interesting, I did an event with Guinness yesterday and it was hosted by Jill Douglas, and Jill is amazing. She's a great friend and just a huge supporter of myself and Maggie and the girls that are coming through, you know, just as somebody that's worked in the industry for 25 years. And she was talking about how when she was first on the scene, she was the first woman to ever basically be on any rugby program in the TV. And she hadn't come from playing, but she was the first presenter. And yes, she still gets comments. And you just think, really? Like, this woman is absolutely brilliant. And actually, it kind of puts into perspective, you know, I think people don't like new. If you regularly sit on a bus or you regularly go to a work canteen, you always sit in the same seat. You always go to the same place. I don't know whether you've ever noticed, when you get out of the shower, you also, I'm pretty sure 95% of people will also dry themselves the same way. We are stuck in our routines and we don't like change. And when change happens, people respond in different ways. And unfortunately now, a woman's voice is too much change for people. They can't comprehend that it's not a full male team that they're listening to. And I think from that perspective, it's going to take time for people to get used to it. I think what I find hard is the comments that when people justify them saying, oh, it's just my opinion, or and I can say horrible things to you because it's what I think. But actually, when it's not constructive, when it's said with venom, it's said to hurt me. And then when I have called out people on Twitter because I look at their profile and they've got two daughters, and I've said, well, I hope that, you know, you're a better role model to them than you have been like in the public. And then they delete it and say, oh, it was a bad joke. Well, like, those things chip away. And actually, I feel that people just need to stop and think. They need to really think about what they're putting out there. And is it helpful to a conversation? Or is it hurtful to somebody? Because imagine if you guys, the first ever podcast, and you got over a million listeners, and however many hundreds of people then put how rubbish you were and she'd never do it again, and you should like put it out, and your voice was awful. Could you imagine and then you go to a day of work, your first ever day of work, and someone absolutely slams you publicly for not being good enough. And it's like, well, no one is when they first start out. That's the whole point of it. You learn and grow and develop. Why don't you actually constructively allow them to develop? You know what? If I'm still rubbish in a year and a bit's time, you can tell me I'm rubbish. but I'd like to think I'm improving and I'm doing all right.
Funny, we called someone out on Twitter the other day who made a comment about the Craig Maxwell Keys podcast clip that Talking Rugby Union pushed out, and in a controlled and constructive manner, by the way, just to get that out there. And he came back and apologised and deleted the initial comment, which is great. He's deleted the comment, but he still posted it in the first place. So it's just, I think it's about the education and challenging these people in a way that makes them realise they're wrong to just hide behind social media.
I think, you know, one of the reasons why, so when Ugo came over and I was like, you know, I was getting quite a lot of anxiety and I was feeling pretty rubbish, and I would get really nervous before a game, and then afterwards straight away mentally I'd be like over and over and over and over and over thinking about different things I said, how the game, what I'd missed, all sorts of things. And actually I had to kind of stop and think and say, right, what am I really proud of doing? I'm really proud of being a mentor for young people. I'm really proud of setting a precedent for young girls to believe that they can do something. They can do something in a space that isn't owned by men. It's actually for everybody. And if I'm really proud of that, and it's something that I am very passionate about doing, how on earth can I, and why am I giving myself that much grief about thinking that I've got to be good enough in a space? And I think it was just that kind of light bulb moment that if I believe it for other people, I've got to believe it for myself. It kind of let me just relax a bit and just know that the people that have put me in that position believe in me, and they're very, very good at their job. And they wouldn't put me there if they didn't think that I was going to, you know, on the path to being good enough to deliver.
And that's something that's similar to what you said, Nolly. I think you did an interview for the RPA. I think it was after maybe you retired for England or retired fully. And you said, we often say in women's sport, if you can't see it, you can't be it. And if I can inspire others through my work and what I do, then that would mean the world to me. And I guess that obviously applies with, you know, women in sport, women in punditry, but across the game in a way, because we had, as Rob said there, we had Craig Maxwell Keys on, and he was saying, well, I'm not going to shut up about my sexuality. You know, it's a story I want to tell. I want to tackle these stigmas. I want to open the rugby environment up as much as possible. And I know, Nolly, you tweeted, and I know the guys at Loosehead tweeted as well about Meg Jones and Celia Kwanzaa, and their lovely interview they did with the Telegraph over the weekend, talking about their sexuality and sort of saying, well, it's absolutely okay for girls who might be playing rugby to feel this way. And I guess it's all about inspiring people, as you just highlighted previously.
Yeah, I've known Megan since she was 15. She is a fantastic young person. She's probably not even, well, I don't think I can call her a young person because she's a lot younger than me. But she is a wonderful rugby player. In fact, one of the most gifted players I've ever coached, and has had a huge run of horrible injuries. But Celia, yeah, again, superb woman. And I think the article was brilliant because it just normalized everything for people. And I suppose what I find interesting, and you speak to Gareth Thomas, and it's like, why should my sexuality or who I am as a person determine what you think of me in my performance environment? Like, what link does it have to anything that I do on a rugby field? Because, you know, and interesting doing a chat with him, he was like, it is like the worst thing. No one talks about being gay in rugby. Obviously, he came out when he was just finishing his career. I think he's still one of the only international players that came out whilst he was still playing. Mm. And he was like, obviously, I did it because I wanted to try and normalize the conversation. But yet we're still not there yet. We're still not, there aren't any other players since then. And that was, what, 8 years ago? And actually, it's fascinating because he was saying, you know, there's this like macho stereotype with rugby and you can't like all of this stuff. And then it's the complete opposite with women's rugby. It's like if you play women's rugby, you're like everyone just assumes you're gay. And then you have to, it's like, no, I'm not. But why? Why does it matter?
It's ridiculous.
I think, yeah, it's crazy, right? And I just, from a women's rugby perspective, I suppose... So I used to run the program at Hartbury College and I was very proud of the program. We had, I think in total, we've had well into double figures of senior internationals that have come out of the program that we ran. Megan Jones is one of them. Sarah Byrne is another. So yeah, not that I coached that year group that long, but I'm claiming all of their success, obviously. I had a phone call from someone from the RFU saying, look, I've got a bit of a challenge with a parent. And I was like, what do you mean? Because we were just about to run our trials. And they said, well, the parent has come to me and said that they don't want their daughter to come to Hartbury because they think that you as an England player will influence them to being gay. And I just laughed because I was like, I don't understand. Like, why on earth would they think that? One, they've got completely the wrong end of the stick with me personally, but what that shouldn't matter at all. But I think that would be probably my only concern, and the negative side of people assuming that everyone involved in women's, and it's not just rugby, it's women's sport is gay, is that then parents have this fear of allowing their daughters to play that sport because they feel that the sport will turn them gay, because that's, and so when people say, oh, and they kind of laugh it off and joke it off. It's like, well, actually, by bringing this into a conversation, you're making it an issue. I was mortified that a parent had said that. And I asked to speak to them. But basically, it was recommended that I didn't. And that it was kind of, they were spoken to by another member of staff. Because actually, in a way, can I see the parents' point? I don't know. Yes, I can. But on the other side, I also think, how have we got to this point? People are refusing their daughter to go to somewhere because of that influence. And I just think it's such a shame that that leads over the fact that I was running the best rugby program in the country. They had a current international play, like there was so much going for it, but yet the parent was so worried about that side of things that the daughter didn't come. So yeah, I think from Megan and Celia's perspective, it's brilliant. I think it's really nice. It normalizes the conversation. It just puts it out there. It's not taboo. It's not hit like cloak and daggers. It's just open, honest. We're really good at what we do and we happen to be together. Like, that's it.
Hi guys, I'm Sam James. I'm a Looseheads ambassador and you're listening to the Looseheads podcast. Make your mental health a priority.
I mean, normalising the conversations is exactly right, Nolly. And I think all of it kind of does lead to tackling the stigma around all of these things, all of these stereotypes, but also just helps in mental health. Because if you are, you know, a young girl who might be afraid to talk about the sexuality, when you see, you know, the stars like Megan and Celia talking about it, it does help with their mental health. And it's just one part of rugby, if you like, that some people do struggle with in terms of the mental health. And just in terms of yourself, Nolly, you mentioned it just at the start of the podcast about your career and some of the injuries that you suffered as well. And how important is it for players in terms of the mental health to maybe try and discuss their injuries as well? Because they are tough times. I know you spoke candidly in an interview about it, I think, with the Times after you retired. But it's an extremely tough time.
Injuries are awful. You know, they not only do they hurt and they're hard work and they're boring and the rehab is mundane and it's tough. You're also stopped from hanging out with your best mates. You're also stopped from doing the thing that you love. You're stopped from being physically challenged where you get to like really go out and take the great thing about rugby, you get to go and like basically smash ourselves physically to, like, you know, in the name of the sport, we throw each other on the floor and run into each other and do all those crazy things. They're ridiculously hard, and it's okay to feel that it's hard. I think for me, when I, my personal journey, and when I really hit rock bottom, I'd had five big major reconstruction surgeries. The final one was my knee. I actually had one afterwards, ironically, on my face, but my first tournament back. But my knee was the one where they told me I wouldn't play again, and it was really tough. And I suppose I got through the first part of rehab, and then it wasn't going right, and I couldn't walk down the stairs pain-free for 5 months. It was just awful, and there was no movement. There was nothing changing. But I didn't allow because I was in the British Olympic Association rehab unit, international, that was aiming for Rio. Great family, great friends, like in a privileged position in my job. I was being paid to rehab. I didn't really feel that I could justify being sad. I didn't feel like I was it was okay for me to find it tough. I just felt like I didn't, you know, I was in too good a position. And I think that lots of people feel like that. They feel like, you know what, I've got a good life, like things are okay, like it's not too bad. I can't tell someone that I'm sad. I can't tell someone that it's right, because from the outside, like, their life is potentially far worse. And I think from that perspective, I took some convincing to go and see somebody to talk, and I just can't believe I waited that long. I can't believe I got myself in such a pickle that I needed to, you know, it then took months and months and months to unpick and to get through it. And, you know, I was very fortunate to have some amazing people by my side, but I probably didn't need to go through that if I'd actually just reached out earlier, if I'd reached out and spoken about things as it was happening, and utilized all those amazing people that I was saying I couldn't talk to because I've got all of this amazing life, when actually I wasn't using any of that. I was trying to deal with it all myself. And I think trying to understand that talking, having, you know, as Rob said, right at the start, having that close network of people to support and to chat to, you have every right to be sad and frustrated and angry and upset when you're injured. You know, it's rubbish. And it's normal. And if you weren't sad about it, you probably shouldn't be playing rugby, because you don't want to get back and play.
I think that's a really good point. And it actually came up, we were speaking to Charlie Beckett yesterday, kind of more generally around lockdown and that side of things. We were all saying, obviously, we're quite fed up with it, but we're in privileged positions. And he made the point that kind of opened my eyes a bit, that, yeah, we might be more privileged than some, but it's okay to still feel a bit shit about it. And I think it's having that confidence to be able to turn around and say, yeah, I'm not feeling too brilliant, and not trying to compare yourself to others all the time.
Yeah. Someone said actually recently, we're all in the same storm, but just in different boats. And I think that that's a really, really nice way of looking at it, because actually, yeah, it might be easier for some things, but actually everybody has challenges. Everybody finds it difficult. And you know what? You can have the best house and the most amazing things, but you can still be incredibly lonely if you've got no one to share it with. What's the quote? Comparison is the something thief, or I can't remember.
I'll be doing the Google of that right now.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's with everything though, isn't it? You know, even as a player, if you're constantly comparing yourself to somebody else, it's just so detrimental to your own confidence. And when I've been through it with coaches, and they compare you to other players, and I'm like, I'm totally different. I'm so different to that person. Like, don't say that I'm like 50-50 selection with that person, when you either want an attacking player, you want a defensive player, or you want a quick player, or you want a kicking player. You want, like, do you know what I mean? We're all different. So don't compare me, because now I'm losing confidence in who I am and what I can bring to the game, what I can bring to the team, what I can, you know. And that's the same with everything in life, isn't it? If you're constantly comparing yourself to other people, you lose the worth that you have to this wonderful world that we're currently navigating.
That's a far better quote, Nolly, than the one I was going to search on Google. So just on sort of you know, you said there that it took you a while to maybe reach out when you were struggling with injuries. Do you kind of maybe see now that times are changing and charities like Lou said are helping with that?
Yeah, definitely. And I really like just the open, honest nature in particular of Looseheads. It's and the people that you've got on board really believe in what you're doing. You know, with Amber and Denny, I think that they're fantastic role models. And the more that we can utilize different people's platforms to talk and to bring communities together, I think the better. I love the simplicity of your logo. I think that, you know, it resonates as soon as you see it, as soon as, like, you know, you drive anywhere, anyone that's involved in rugby, spot rugby post, you'll kind of look for a little bit longer than something, you know, football post. I'm like, oh, whatever. Do you know what I mean? You're like, you know, and so, yeah, I think it's super important that charities are there to support people, but at the same time provide a platform and a communication and influence, just so people can reach and have parts of it when they feel ready, so they can have it in their own dose rather than necessarily it constantly being thrown at someone. I think that that's what, you know, social media should be used for. It's a platform for little reminders, little pop-ups, little bits of inspiration, storytelling, positive news, negative news when it needs to be said. Yeah,
definitely. And just one thing that I wanted to mention, and feel free to say if you don't want to talk about it as well, but what in an interview you did with the Times, you talked about kind of your first game back with England and kind of the emotion built up, and before the game you sort of let it all out, if that's probably the right expression. Is that because of what you literally just talked about for the last 5 minutes, that it might have taken you a while to have that conversation, you realised all that support and the hard work that's got you back to where you were, and at that moment you were like, well, here I am again, can I reach the high standards that I've already set myself?
Yeah, I think one of the hardest things, the hardest battles I had with my knee, is that I knew I wouldn't come back the player that I was. And I never, ever wanted to be one of those players that was talked about, or she's not been the same since her knee. She's not been the same since. And I think that happens, and it's crushing. It's really crushing, because there's nothing you can do, right? There's literally nothing you can do. And yeah, that was the concern. I actually was okay. I was okay going into the game. Team run went well. I was in, I had, but I did have a slight strain in my adductor, and it had been fine, it'd been managed. And I was like, actually, you know what? It feels all right. I feel good. I'm all taped up. Everything's fine. The only thing is, there was a hip spiker tape that I had, which basically tapes your pants on so you can't go to the loo. So once you're in your tape. Nothing. That was basically the most of my problem. And then match day, and we walked to Twickenham, and we're walking in, and the guys are playing, and all of a sudden I had this wave of emotion and anxiety, and I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know where I was. Like, this is crazy. Like, I'm however many games into international career, I've played at Twickenham however many times. And then someone just casually said to me, when was the last time you played here, Noel? And I was like, trying to work out, and we were like sat chatting, and I was like, oh God, I don't know. And I was like, oh my God, 5 years ago. And the last time I played here 5 years ago, I tore my quad off my hip bone, and I was carried off the field against New Zealand. And that was the start of me then going into a series of really, really significant injuries. And so my brain had done all the computing without actually really me realizing that all of that worry, all of that concern, all of that, oh my God, I'm back at Twickenham with a hip injury. Like, is it going to happen again? And so it just shows the power of your mind. All of that was happening without me really comprehending why. I think as soon as I let myself think it, the floodgates opened. Very, very fortunate to have a brilliant relationship with the physio, Rick. And he said, right, you got 10 seconds. And at the end of the 10 seconds, you are the athlete I know has gone through the rehab, has done everything, is in amazing form. Yes, you've got this little pull, but you've come through everything in flying colours. So look, you got your hip spiker on ready. We're going to be going. 10 seconds, gave me a countdown. And I think just having someone there that I trusted, that I believed, that believed in me and believed in what I'd done. And also that real nice reminder that I was okay, that I had
gone through the hard work, and it was okay to feel like that. And also, he didn't tell me to stop crying. He just actually gave me a countdown, which is basically telling me to stop crying, but in a really nice way that was in I controlled, not him. And yeah, I went out. The first thing I did was absolutely welly someone off the back of a scrum. I don't even think I should have been in the line at the point. I think I just ran in and tackled someone. And then scored the try that has haunted Harriet Miller Mills for the last 5 years, because I don't pass her the ball, which I think is hilarious. So it's amazing, isn't it, how you, that's the snapshot that people see. But actually the backstory to all of it was probably one of my most vulnerable. But yet when you've got the right people around you and you talk about it and let it out, and okay to let out that emotion, it's amazing. And imagine if I didn't. Imagine if all of that was in there without me comprehending it, without me realizing it was there. I probably would have had a terrible game. I would have been really frustrated, been like, why? I hate rugby. I'm rubbish at rugby. My knee's not right, blah, 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 whatever. And actually it was nothing to do with that. It was just the fact that obviously my brain was remembering 5 years before.
Hi guys, I'm Amber Reed and I'm a Loose Heads ambassador, and you're listening to the Loose Heads podcast. Remember that mental health is a journey, not a destination.
So now it's time for something a little bit different on the Loose Heads podcast, but don't worry, Nolly will be back. She's going to talk about her World Cup win in 2014, an exciting year for women's rugby to come in 2021. But as I said, we're going to do something a little bit different. So we've included this insert really to get a bit of more of a feel for who Loose Heads work with and the relationships they're building outside of just the ambassadors and people we get on the podcast. So Rob joins me for this little bit. And Rob, first of all, and this is once again another excellent idea from yourself, but why did you want to include this in a podcast, and why did you think for Loose Heads this was important?
Yeah, I think it's a good opportunity to sort of give a platform to partners, people who are fundraising for the Loose Heads Foundation, and more generally just people who want to come on and have a bit of a chat, really. We often say that Loose Heads is for everyone, so it's an opportunity for people to come on, have a chat, promote what they're doing, tell a story, and simply get involved. So anyone listening who wants to be featured on the podcast, just give us a shout, give us a message, and get involved. But, you know, there's no better time to start with this little insert, with it being more important now than ever to start, you know, and keep banging the drum about mental health. And we've got a fantastic guest for this particular episode.
Yeah, I think you've chosen very well, Robert. It ties in exactly what you just said there. We're very pleased to welcome Susie Weaver from the organisation So Happy in Town to on the podcast. So Susie, thanks so much for giving us your time to join us on the Loose Heads podcast today. And just give us a little bit first and foremost about what So Happy in Town is and how you came up with the idea.
So thank you firstly for having me on here. It's brilliant to be on the podcast. But 2 years ago, basically, I started a campaign on the back of my blog, which is called So Happy in Town, also known as SHIT. And I started a campaign primarily focusing on young people's mental health, because obviously there's so many young people, sadly, now struggling with their mental health, and there's still the stigma. And it was all about normalizing that conversation and letting them know that it's okay, however you're feeling. You know, it's okay to talk about it. There's nothing to be ashamed about. We all have mental health. It's something we're born with. So it's really good to just keep everyone talking. So not just young people, but, you know, of all ages, especially now during this pandemic. But I got on board with Young Minds, and we sell t-shirts and hoodies, and the big slogan, it's quite bold, as you know, is it's okay to feel SHIT. And we've made over £25,000 now for Young Minds. So every single penny from every sale goes to them, to help them, and they need it more than ever, obviously right now with the increasing number of young people reaching out to them for support. So yeah, the momentum just built. We got some amazing celebrities on board. We got some amazing rugby players on board. And through Instagram and social media, the message just sort of spread, and we got more and more people talking about it, and more people contacting me saying, you know, this is the first time I've ever felt able to talk about this. I've really been struggling. And I always said, you know, if I could help one person, then it would all be worthwhile. And, you know, we seem to have helped a lot of people, and just trying to keep this conversation going about mental health.
Yeah, and I was going to come on to kind of the young mind stuff, Susie, because obviously this is a podcast, but behind Susie is boxes and boxes of the t-shirts she's just mentioned. But I noticed just reading a few of the blogs and the homepage of the website before, you do say you're a massive advocate for young people's mental health, Susie, but also you do tie in the So Happy and Tell with parents as well. So of course we can talk about young people, but over the last 12 months in particular, it's been a really tough time for parents, hasn't it?
Yeah, it really has. I mean, suddenly we've all been thrown into this crazy situation where, you know, I'm here with my three children, my husband sort of taking up the spare room. They're all trying to, you know, homeschool. I'm trying to work and keep them on track and really check that they're okay all the time, because it's really, really tough for them. Their worlds have been thrown upside down, as have the worlds of the parents, as you say. So I know through talking to friends and through people through the campaign that, you know, yeah, parents are really feeling pulled in every single direction at the moment. And, you know, they're struggling with their own mental health whilst also just trying to make sure everyone else is okay in their family and their kids are okay. And often their children are not, they're really struggling. And it's also, you know, where do they go with that? What do they do? Because none of us as parents, we're just, you know, muddling by each day. We're not experts in any of this. So yeah, it's a really, really tough time for parents as well. And Young Minds actually have a parent support line. It's not just for the young people. They have a whole family support line so that parents and carers, whoever, can get in touch with them to just, you know, get more support.
Yeah, and I guess with that, I mean, it's an amazing amount of money you mentioned there, Susie, that you've been able to raise for Young Minds. But when you're able to sort of branch out, not only from yourself, but to speak to people in rugby in particular, with this being a bit of a rugby podcast, but also the wider celebrities and high profile people. I mean, we talked just before we press record, you've had a number of the Scottish players on. We've had Joe Marler, Jason Leonard. So I guess that does help as well boost that profile. And it's brilliant to see those guys support what you're doing.
Yeah, it's been absolutely amazing. I was saying to you both that not seeing the rugby world, I shouldn't say it's my favourite sport, you know, but there you go, it is. So when I approached the rugby players, they have just been absolutely amazing. I can't tell you, the support has been incredible. So when you get someone like Joe Marler, who, you know, has so a huge audience on social media, and he's in his t-shirt saying, you know, it's okay, and he has been open about mental health struggles, you know, that is touching the lives of so many people, from young, all different ages to old. I've had, like, you know, much older people say to me, you know, I saw Joe whoever in the t-shirt, I'm a big rugby fan, but I've never felt able to talk about my own mental health struggles, and now this is the first time I'm doing that, and, you know, that has just made it all worthwhile. But yeah, we've had more than half the Scottish rugby team, as you know, I'm a Scot, so that's been amazing. And yeah, just so many of the players have been hugely supportive.
I guess, Rob, as well, that's kind of overlaps to what we've done on the Loose Heads podcast. Susie's absolutely right. When someone like Joe Marler wears one of her t-shirts and someone says, oh, we saw Joe wearing it, we've seen it a number of times with just people listening to the Loose Heads podcast, haven't we? And it does have that kind of strength when someone does, who people may idolise, does come out and speak about the mental health and does do support campaigns like this.
Yeah, they're role models at the end of the day. So you got these big macho characters coming out saying it's okay to feel not okay, and it's okay not to be okay. Then people do listen to that. People really do listen to that. Susie, oh flower of Scotland, it's no secret that you're Scottish. You're a big Scottish rugby fan. We were planning to record this on Friday, but it turns out we're recording this on Tuesday after the weekend. So I'm sure you're very happy about that.
You can
brag about Scotland now, but just how good were they and how happy were you on Saturday evening?
Oh, I could, absolutely amazed, astounded, so, so proud. I mean, honestly, I think as Scots, we tend to go into these games presuming, it's not the right attitude, but presuming we're not going to win. But from the very beginning, it just felt like Scotland had the possession, and, you know, they were playing so well. I remember thinking halfway through the first half, I think we might do this. And then I think as soon as I think that, you know, it's all going to just spiral. But honestly, the Scottish boys did us all proud. And as a nation, it was just what we needed. But no, it was an amazing match.
Rob, you were supporting Scotland, judging by your social media accounts at the weekend as well.
I was. I actually tweeted that, didn't I? Oh, flower of Scotland. I think they were all absolutely fantastic. Redpath, Watson and Hogg were phenomenal. I'm sure they had a few jars to celebrate as well afterwards.
Yeah, I think this delayed chat with Susie, it was on purpose, to be fair. She knew that Scotland were going to beat England, and they thought, well, let Chris host it, the only England fan on this call right now, and we will get Susie on. But just back to Loosehead, Susie, I mean, when did you kind of find out about the guys? I know, again, before we pressed record, you said, oh, yeah, we just got to know each other via Instagram. And I guess this is what happens sometimes as well, that you see someone doing something great and then you just strike up that connection. It seems like you guys have got a good relationship at the moment.
Yeah, I saw Rob and the guys from Loosehead just popping up, you know, a lot, because we were doing similar things on mental health and rugby. And I saw what Looseheads were doing, and absolutely amazing getting the word, the mental health awareness out there in the rugby world. And I think we obviously followed each other, and then I kept tagging them. I just think this is going to really annoy the boys, because I just tagged them on anything I've done with rugby. And then we talked, I think it was before Christmas, wasn't it? We had a chat, all of us, and just saying, you know, what can we do together? And we're hoping to do more collaborations when we get out of this situation, when we can, to sort of, it's all about, you know, collaborating and just helping each other and supporting them, you know, to raise as much mental health awareness as possible.
Absolutely, absolutely, Susie. Well, it's been great to chat to you, Susie, on the Looseheads podcast. Before we go, where can people find out about So Happy in Town, website, social media, that kind of thing?
Yeah, website is www.sohappyintown.com, and on all my social media, I'm at So Happy in Town.
Brilliant. And also on the website, there is a link to the t-shirts, which I know Susie's keen to get rid of, so do help our wonderful cause.
My husband's keen to get rid of them because they've taken over the house. Yes, the as soon as you go onto the website, they pop up, the pop-up shop will come up in your face. And yeah, 100% profit goes to Young Minds.
Yeah, it's a brilliant cause, a brilliant charity, and it's brilliant work which Susie's doing. So many thanks to Susie for taking the time to chat to us on the Looseheads podcast. Once again, thank you to Rob, and we will return now to the Nolly Waterman podcast. Hope you enjoy. Just to sort of talk about sort of those high points in your career, obviously that try, as you say, not bad, that World Rugby and England Rugby were recognised at Nolly. And obviously another try which is synonymous with you is that in the World Cup. But before we get onto that, what was the sort of the 2014 experience like for you? Because we had Amber Reid on the podcast when we first really started doing them. And she talked about how a number of players in the squad were looking back at 2010. And 2006, and it kind of spurred you guys on towards that semi-final, towards the final. So what was the whole experience like for you?
Yeah, it was third time lucky for five of us.
We did so much work. Our psychologist, Cherry, was just amazing. She came in the autumn of 2013 and basically said, look, if you guys want to win this World Cup, you've got to become a team. You know, when the pressure came on and mistakes happened, it wasn't just cracks. It was massive, big, like canyons opened up in the team's performance. And we need to change that. We need to bring you closer together. You need to understand how you tick. And actually one of the first sessions she said was right. And she pointed to like different players. Me, she was like, okay, Nolly, what's Emily like on a good day? Like, all right, so Emily, what's Katie like on a bad day? And we were kind of just like, what are you on about? And then actually what she was basically saying is, do you know each other? Do you know each other's personalities? Do you know each other as people, not just players? And you know what? I'd played with some of those girls for years. And yet I still, when they share, we then wrote it down, me on a good day on the back of the paper. And actually when we shared it, shared that vulnerability, shared the fact that we knew on bad days that, you know, we were overreactive, more emotional, da, da, da. When we shared that, we actually learned about each other as a lot. One of the other things that we did before the tournament, which really kind of galvanized us, was we all did a video, which is actually an old camcorder that shows how long ago it was, how different things are now, of our why, and why are we wanting to go to the World Cup and win the World Cup? And it was just amazing. It was one of the first things we watched. And one of the second thing we watched was the World Cup final documentary from 2010.
Wow.
And it was this, like, it was brutal. It was the first time I'd seen it. It was aired by Sky, and first time I'd actually seen the final back, and it was really tough. And it's amazing how those big moments in our lives, we just shut a door on and don't reflect on. And in sport, you can do that because obviously you can physically just not watch it again. You can relive it in your mind. So yeah, worked really hard to come together as a team, and just had loads of fun off of it. We just had loads of fun. We had the dice rolling, which was if you were late for meetings, you basically got given this giant dice, and the things changed every week. Unfortunately, Claire Allen was pretty brutal, so there was all sorts of poor things that you had to do. Very embarrassing.
Such as?
What goes on tour stays on tour, Chris. It would be wrong of me to...
It was very cheeky of me to ask you, sorry. Sorry, Nolly.
Yeah, put it this way, there's things that I wish I could erase from my memory, but they just weren't. But it just was such a brilliant dynamic, and it was a real team effort, you know, on and off the field. And fundamentally, we got on and supported each other as people, probably before we supported each other as players. And yeah, and then obviously, you know, New Zealand losing to Ireland was a winner.
Yeah, absolutely, Nolly. And I kind of get what you just talked about there, just watching it back a little bit, because I watched the highlights the other day, and you see on the faces of some of you girls, and the girls you mentioned, Katie, yourself, Skaz, you see that maybe relief in a way, if that's fair. Like, you've got the relief, but also the team spirit. Do you know what? It just shows that close-knit and how you all came together and achieved what you wanted to achieve that you missed out on probably 4 years before.
Oh yeah, you know, to have two silver medals, I didn't even know where they were. I hated them. To me, they represented losing, and I am far too competitive to ever celebrate that. Everyone's like, oh my God, you're second in the world. I'm like, yeah, great. Like, it's first loser, right? So I just couldn't handle my silver medals. And then, yeah, like at the final whistle, you can see me in the back of a photograph and a little bit of the video. I just dropped to my knees. Because it was just pure relief that we'd finally done it. All of us had our different journeys to get to that point. You know, a lot of the girls had lost in 2010 in a home World Cup, which is awful. Yeah. To have lost in 2006 as well as a 21-year-old was pretty painful, but I kind of knew that I could put it right. So then to not put it right in 2010 and then to get that next opportunity, it was a relief. And then brilliant celebrations afterwards. It was great. Because afterwards, all of the friends and family had been to one pub, and it was on this roundabout, and it was really close. It was like walking distance. It was basically everyone meet here and then we'll go to the stadium, get tickets out, blah, blah, blah. And then on the way home, the bus drove round the roundabout where they were, and we were like, that's the pub. We need to stop. Anyway, we went back round the roundabout, we went round the roundabout a couple of times, and at that point, everyone came out of this pub, and there was hundreds of people there, and they were every single person that is closest to us were in that room, and we had all of the past players, and we had the World Cup with us, had our medals, got off the bus, and the whole crowd started singing "Swing Low" for us, and then we got to go and have a beer with them, which actually at the end of most tours, at the end of most tournaments, you don't get to have a beer with your friends and family. Like, you see them in the stadium and then you're whisked away into like all the formal stuff and you never get to see them. And it's fine, like, it's cool because you want to be with your team and you're having a laugh and stuff, but actually it's really nice for me to see the past players, for me to see other people's parents that I've known for years, you know, just to like have crazy photos and with holding the World Cup like a baby and stuff. And free beer because it's quite expensive in France. My mum paid.
Yeah, it is expensive in France. It's just double figures for a beer of euros. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. One thing you touched on there, Nolly, which I want to go back to in a second, but we can't not talk about your try. And something else Amber said on the podcast when she was picking her team, you were obviously in it, but she said, I would never get the ball off her. And it was roles reversed kind of in the final, wasn't it, for you? Because Maggie Alfonsi had the ball and you were quite adamant that she wasn't going to pass it to you, but she gave it to you. But Amber was just like, yeah, that was Nolly, no chance.
Yeah, no. I had very sticky little hands. And honest to God, Amber and I just have got, she's such a brilliant girl, just amazing fun. She's so, if you do insights and you know the like the four colours, so blue, so down the line, like, and just, I'm polar opposite. So very sunshine yellow. And having played with her at club and country, she just would just continually roll her eyes. And then the funniest thing was whenever we would play, and off I'd go on this counter-attack, and in the background you'd see Amber like trying to chase me, like, where is she going? I'm like, I don't know where I'm going. And she's like, you're literally the worst person. But because she was so calm and so like organized, I think my like craziness on the field just blew her brain.
But just to go back to that pub, the pub stuff you were talking about there, Nolly, and not because I'm missing pubs, but you made quite a good point that you said about, oh, everyone was there and you're meeting parents and stuff. At that time, you probably didn't because you were enjoying yourself. Did you maybe potentially realise what impact you might have had on the nation and the women's game over here? Because it is, winning a World Cup is such a big achievement, but, you know, you're spending it in with your friends and family. Did you maybe think, oh, this could be the start of something maybe a few days after it sunk in?
No, God, we just won a tournament with my mates. Like, it was just like, yeah, cool, finally got a gold one. Yeah, this is cool. and then we got home, it's like a full press conference. We're like, this doesn't happen. Like, this is weird. Doing all these interviews, and Katie as captain hadn't been to bed and was like, literally, like, just streety. Obviously, they were trying to do these important press conferences. It was just brilliant. And I think, you know, then going on... Rachel Burton and I went on to Good Morning Britain or one of those thing like chats, and then they were like, yeah, you've got to be up at 4 a.m. We were like, we haven't been to bed yet, so that's like going up to like, should we go to bed for like a few hours? I'm not sure, like, what's happening? I was so tired, but it was just, I don't know, it was all a bit of a whirlwind. Obviously we partied for a few days, and I think one of the most special things I got to do was, I was the only girl really that kind of took rugby seriously in my area growing up, and since probably 2013 there was over 100 women and girls playing at the club. So after we'd won the World Cup in 2014, we'd arranged with the BBC to take the actual cup down to my club in Minehead and surprised all of the girls. I was supposedly the like surprise with my medal. And then we actually walked in, Sophie Hemming and I, who was actually named recently. We were both in the team of the decade for World Rugby. She's a local Bristol girl. Yeah, we walked into the clubhouse with the actual World Cup. And if I'd ever thought at the age of 6, when I was running around down at Minehead Barbarians, that I'd walk into my club with a World Cup, it just blows my mind. And then seeing all of those young girls have photos with it and just be like, I want to play for the Red Roses, I want to do this, I love rugby. I was just, and looking at all of them train, I was just like, it's like a mini rugby session on a Sunday, but yeah, it's all girls. And like, it just was so special. And so I suppose there was that, and then we got to tour the cup around. He took it to Ashton Gate, went up to King's Home, the whole of the shed sung Swing Low to us, and that was with Mo and a couple of the other girls. So yeah, it was like so much more than I could ever expect. And people just finally said, oh my God, you girls were awesome, the rugby was brilliant, blah blah blah, blah, rather than, oh, didn't you do well, look at you playing rugby. Like, actually started to take it seriously. And I think getting the World Cup out of the Southern Hemisphere for the first time in 20 years, I think not only had an impact over here, but it also had a massive impact across the Northern Hemisphere, because where the RFU goes, it then pulls the other unions along.
Yeah, and I guess also being named Sports Personality Team of the Year for 2014 was another sort of string to the bow in terms of that. And a visit to Downing Street as well, Nolly, were you composed for that one, or was it another early start?
We went on a bus together, and they were like holding us outside for ages, and we were like, everyone was all excited, and then we were waiting in the bus for so long. I was like, oh, let's just go in. And like, some of the girls started getting hungry, so I was like, oh God, this is the worst place to be, like, you know, this really posh place in a tracksuit waiting for the Prime Minister when you've got a hungry rugby squad. But yeah, it was really special, it was really cool. And there's a brilliant photograph of myself, Claire Allen, Rachel Burford, Heather Fisher and Streety, our head coach. He coached the four of us at college. We all went to a rugby college and he coached us. And yeah, there's one of us like all play fighting in Downing Street, which I think is, I don't know, a nice reminder of why I do rugby, but the friends I've got.
And just sort of on the World Cup experience and linking it to this year, potentially, Nolly, obviously huge year for women's rugby. We've seen the Six Nations schedule is finally announced for the start of April, and we're obviously, hope, fingers crossed, building up to 2021. So what an opportunity this seems to be for women's rugby this year.
Oh, it's massive. And you know what? Of all of the places in the world that you'd want a place, I want a tournament to go ahead, it's New Zealand, because it's the place that's the most normal. Although annoyingly, they don't need any help. They're current world champions, although England have taken them over in the world ranking status, that it's a bit of a dodgy one with women's rugby because of the games, the way you play. But they've had like full season, they're playing sevens, they've got the Red Bull Ignite, they've got all sorts, they've got 15s tournaments, they're absolutely flying in New Zealand. But from a rugby perspective, it's been amazing to have the Allianz Premier 15s play. The RFU backing them this year over and above the championship, I think has been so huge. The fact that they've just announced that the Six Nations will go ahead in a shortened format, I actually think it's really exciting. It's a perfect opportunity to, in April, start the conversation again about women's rugby, get people excited about it, get media behind it. New formats is always interesting because it creates debate. Whether you like it or you don't, you know, it's good to have that that chatter. And you know what? Previously, people would basically, I mean, I remember when I was playing, for the vast majority of my career, they'd be like, oh, women's have got a Six Nations. Or but they'd be like, oh, women's play rugby. Woo. And then it'd be like, oh, women's have got a Six Nations. Oh, wow. Whereas now it's like the narrative on social media is, oh, the women's rugby, the Six Nations has been changed and like it's good. And there's far more talk, which is a super positive move, especially when we're going into the fact that this is a World Cup year. And it's, yeah, it's exciting. It's just weird because it's the first one I've gone through without being a player.
I was going to say, not a fifth World Cup coming out of retirement, Nolly, for you.
No, that would mean training, and I'm dog walking at the moment. It's my limit.
Yeah, well, like Lolly said there, hopefully it's going to start the conversation and build the conversation about the women's game. It's a really exciting year, but of course we've had Nolly on the podcast to hopefully start conversations around mental health as well. And Nolly, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you on the Loose Heads podcast. Thank you so much for giving us your time, and look forward to seeing you on the telly over the next few weeks for the Six Nations. It's something we're all looking forward to in terms of that escapism and a bit of rugby to get our teeth into. So Nolly, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. It's my absolute pleasure. And thank you for all of the awesome work you guys are doing.
Fantastic. Thanks very much to Nolly. And as always, many thanks to Rob and Dave as well for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you very much.
And that has been another Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Loose Heads podcast. Join the movement.
Let's get people talking about mental health.
And together we will tackle the stigma. This is the Loose Heads podcast.